Okay, so this course will present different approaches based on geodesic method for image segmentation. So the main subject is image segmentation, which means extract from an image some the contours of some objects in the image. And but it will also apply to some different problems in image analysis. So the main topic, the main application is segmentation of tubular structure like vessels in medical images, because they are very well adapted to this kind of method. So here is the program of the whole thing that, and we'll start today with an introduction on what we call geodesics or minimal paths, iconal equation, fast marching and front propagation. So today I think it will be the main basic tools that will be used later on and extended to 3D geodesics in a 3D image, using geodesic methods for remeshing a surface, defining anisotropic metric, finding closed contours, and using this geodesic distance for geodesic voting, which was very recent method we introduced, and different methods to find closed contour of an object in image. And by the end, we'll see also application to virtual endoscopy, which was one of the main motivation of this work at the very beginning when we started developing these geodesic tools. Okay, so the motivation, and except the application, I mean the first motivation, in fact, to introduce this work was active contours, which were introduced by Teasopoulos, Kass, Witkin, like 25 years ago. And an active contour, I assume, who never heard about active contours? Okay. So an active contour is a contour that is, I mean, a curve that is drawn on an image. So here, for example, you have an aerial image, and you're looking to find a curve that follows the road. So an active contour, I mean, this is applied to this case, but it can it be applied to other imaging, like a vessel here or the boundary of a region here. The idea of active contours is defining an energy that we'd like to minimize. So we are looking for a curve minimizing energy, which is composed of two terms. One term is smoothing term, regularization term, which makes the curve smooth. And the second term is a fidelity term, which called also image term, which makes the curve being close to the features you're looking for. So for example, here if you're looking for a road, the features should be, you're looking for a curve that locates where the gray level here is bright. I mean, it's brighter on the road than on the background. Or for a vessel here, it's the contrary, it's darker on the vessel. So we should take a feature which is to minimize, which is the gray level. Or here we have a contour, and along the contour, what has to be minimized is a gradient-based feature, which makes that along the contour the gradient should be large. So in the active contours, the one first task is to define what is called the potential, the feature potential, P, that has to be minimized. So the potential P should be have low values where the curve should locate. So as I said, this potential P can be here something like minus the gray level, or here it can be the gray level or increasing function of the gray level, or here a decreasing function of the gradient of the image. Okay. So active contours were solving energy minimization using an initial curve and make gradient descent on this curve. So for example, the user would click on 3 points here, defining this polygonal curve. And from this curve, it deforms under action of forces which correspond to the derivation of the energy. So you have image force coming from the potential term and smoothing force coming from the regularization term. So from this initial curve, there is a gradient descent on the energy which will make the curve evolve and stabilize at the local minimum of the energy. The main issue with active contours is by definition of their evolution term as a gradient descent, it can be stopped in a local minima that is not the minima we wish to have. So for example here, what you can see is that from this initial curve here, since what we look to minimize is the potential is based on the gray level, it is like if the curve is attracted by high values of the gray level, that the curve is attracted by local maxima of the gray level, which means that when the curve is here is on the road, it will be attracted by the white values. But when the curve is here on the background, it can be stopped here in its evolution because here you have some values that are brighter than the what is around. So here you have a local minima of the potential. Here you have a local minima of the potential. And this local minima acts as an attraction force that blocks, that stops the evolution of the curve locally. So the active contour method will give you a curve equilibrium at this curve, which here it will follow well the road, but here it doesn't follow the road. It follows some local minima of the energy, like here as well. So in order to make the active contour work in this kind of image, you would have to initialize the curve on the left by a very precise curve that goes along the road. So you have to give many points along the road, and if this initial curve is well initialized along the road, then the active contour gradient descent will work very well, and you'll get a smooth curve. So you see that here you have a very nice smooth curve which follows the road. So this was a very early motivation for this geodesic methods, that what we are going to see now is if you give just one start point and one end point, then you are able to find the global minima of the energy of the active contours. As defining the active contours as a geodesic path, minimizing a geodesic distance between these 2 points. And you'll get a curve similar to this one, but just giving these 2 endpoints. Instead of giving a very precise curve here. So to see the next example with the where one motivation is to find vessels in medical images. So you would give a starting point and an end point, and you would find here the curve along the vessel. And here, giving a starting point and an end point, you would get here curve that follows the contour of this black region here in ultrasound image. So for the moment, this geodesic method will look for a geodesic path, or what I call also a minimal path, between 2 points, P0 and P1. So it, by definition, it will be an open contour with between 2 points. But in many application, what you're looking for is a closed contour. For example, here you have a closed contour of this object. So in the second part later on, we'll see how to use these minimal paths of geodesics to find a closed contour of an object. Okay. So the main idea is now is to define the energy as a simplified energy of the active contours and then define it in a way that you find the global minimum of the energy. So the energy, so the active contour energy, writes like this. Usually, so if C is a curve that is drawn on the image domain, the usual active contour energy is the integral of W1 C prime square plus W2 C second square plus P of C of S dS. So this is the integral along the curve of these two smoothing terms and this potential term. So once again, the potential term can be seen as the expert giving what he's looking for in the image. So as I said, this can be a function of the image, the gray level image, or the gradient of the image. And these terms, you see derivatives that when they are minimized, it means that it makes the curve smoother. So there are two evolutions in the active contours. The very early definition of the active contours is this one, where S is a parameter along the curve. So it means here from 0 to 1, it is any parameterization. Now, later on, this S became the arc length, because it gives a geometric definition of the energy. And in this case, what means it can be replaced by 0 L here. L is the length of the curve, and then C prime by definition would be 1. Now, a simplification of the energy is to remove this second order term, which corresponds to avoiding high curvature, which means that when you remove this term, you can still get corners. But the advantage of removing this term is that it enables us to define the curve, the curve energy, very simply by including this smoothing term inside the potential term. So this is what we are here. So we write the energy as integral of W plus P, and the idea here is that W can be seen as the regularization parameter. W can be seen as the smoothing term, which reduces here at W times the length of the curve. So minimizing the length of the curve is a way to regularize the curve, because if you have a curve like this, it is much longer than if you have a curve like this. So this energy of the active contour is, by different steps, it is changed to this simplified version, where the smoothing term is included in the potential term, and it reduces to the integral. Oh, I don't see anything. So it reduces, it doesn't work anymore, but I have one, maybe I finished this slide. So the integral of P tilde of C, where P tilde is equal to W plus P. So the energy of the active contour now is reduced to this integral of potential P, where which is defined on every point on the image domain, which means that you have an image, like, let's see, I, and from it you define a potential P at every point of the image, which, as I said, can be a function of I or gradient I or something else. And given a curve C, you consider this energy, which is the integral of P along the curve. So now this energy here corresponds to what was called later on the geodesic active contour. And this is called the geodesic active contour since this corresponds to the geodesic distance between these two points according to a metric that is weighted distance, where at each point you have a weight p. So the basic case where p equals 1 everywhere means that you have the classical geodesic distance, which corresponds to here the length of the curve, the Euclidean length of the curve. So when p is in general, you have a distance that is weighted by p, and in order to have a definition that is coherent here, you assume that the potential p now is positive, which can also always be done. In the classical active functions, p can be anything, but in usually p can be a function like increasing function of I. In this case, it is positive, but if it is a decreasing function, it can be, for example, if you wish to have minus I, it should be like something like max of I minus I, something like this, in order to be positive. And in case you wish to be a function of the gradient of I, so usually in the classical active contours, what you minimize is minus this square. So in order, when it is minimized, you maximize the gradient, and so the curve locates at a larger values of the gradient. So in order to have a positive potential, what is usually used is a decreasing function, which is like this, 1 over 1 plus gradient I, or sometimes it's square or some other power. So this way defines a function that is positive and this that is smaller where the gradient is larger. Okay. So this is the connection with active contours, and now we'll see how this new setting of the energy allows us to find the global minimum and to allow us to find the geodesic path between two points. Yeah, actually, this is a very simple metric because the metric is constant at each point. Later on, we'll see a Riemannian metric where the metric will depend on the orientation of the curve, where at each point you have really a tensor value. But here, the Riemannian metric is identity times a p. So for the moment, it is a very simple metric. Okay. So maybe I'll change my... So now, so we wish to find a curve C that joins two points P0 and P1 in the image in order to minimize this energy. So what is defined here is, so we do two steps, which where the first step defines what is called minimal action, or what is in real in actually the geodesic distance to the starting point P0. So we give the starting point P0, and you know, in order to find the minimal path between P0 and P1, in fact, we find the minimal path between P0 and any point in the image. So we solve a larger problem in order to be solved, in fact. So in order to solve this problem with one point, we solve it with every point in the image, which means that for any point P in the image domain, we are looking for the minimal value of the energy E of C among all paths C that start at P0 and end at P. So once again, you leave P0, and for any point P in the image domain, you're looking among all paths joining P0 and P a path minimizing the energy E. Okay, so which is this integral. So this we call it UP0 of P, and this can be seen as the geodesic distance to P0 according to the metric P tilde. So once we have solved, we have computed this geodesic distance, and we'll see in a moment how to solve it. In order to find the minimal path between P0 and P1, we do backpropagation step, which is simply a gradient descent along UP0, which means that once you have found the geodesic distance to P0 everywhere in the image, to find the minimal path, you start at P1 and you make a gradient distance. So now the gradient distance is a point that moves on the image domain following the gradient field. And then it will be join P0 following the minimal path. So we'll see all this in large details in the following. Okay, so it shows some other problem, but maybe I'll skip this. Okay. What I mean here is that the problem that we've seen here can be found also in other kind of problems here, that looking for minimizing the time to get to some point. So assume that you are at point A, and you wish to reach point B in the minimal time to get to B in the time the shortest time as possible, and you go in any direction at the same speed. So if the speed is the same everywhere, then it means that from A, you reach any point at time t, you can reach any point on this circle. So so what it means that is that the points that can be reached in the given time are circles. And what you see here is that the minimal path between B and A is the straight line, and you can see that it is orthogonal to level set of this time function. So we'll see that later on. But the interesting case here is a case where you wish to reach point A from point B, where the speed can be different in different points. So assume here that somebody is in the sea, and he needs help from the I don't find the English term. The guardian? Lifeguard, okay. So lifeguard is in B, so on the sand beach, and somebody on A is needs help. So now the lifeguard must be at point A as fast as possible. So he has to find the shortest path, knowing that he can move on the sand at some speed and move on the sea at some different speed. So for example, you assume that he goes faster on the sand, that is he swims, then it means that he should go along the sand and then swim. So this means that this corresponds exactly to solving this kind of energy, because the potential can be seen as the inverse of the speed. So we'll see that later on. But what you see that here from point A, you see here the point that can be reached at time t, here, as long as you are in a constant speed region, these are circles. Then when you are going on the sand here, you go on a longer distance on the sand than on the sea. And so the minimal path here from B to A will be two straight lines. And this problem can also be defined with obstacles, that from B the lifeguard has to go to point A, but there are some regions that he cannot walk or swim on the black regions. And so this means that here you would have a potential P that is infinite, in order to avoid completely these regions. And so here you would have a minimal path, a geodesic path from B to A, which will go around the obstacle and also minimize the time to go from B to A. So this kind of problems can be solved in exactly the same way. So to come back to the first example with the aerial image, what I say that in order to solve the problem here, we have two steps. One step is to define this geodesic distance, and one step is to find the path by gradient distance. So by gradient descent. So here, this is how the minimal action U looks like. Starting from this point here, you see here that you have darker values. So it means that at the beginning, the energy is small because the path itself is small. So the distance between P0 and itself is zero. So you have smaller values, but here you see that you have smaller values when you follow the road, and you have larger values when you go inside the background region. So you see better what happens here, having a look at the level sets of this geodesic distance. You see that the level set here is a small circle, and this small circle, you see that the level sets go faster. I mean, if you see this level set as a front propagation, as we'll see in a moment, you see that you have this level set go slower where the potential is larger, and the level set goes faster where the potential is smaller. It means along the road, you see that you have larger distance between two level sets. So you see the same thing on here on vessel image, starting at P0. But now let's come to the idea on how to solve this minimal action definition. So we've defined UP0 of P is the minimal value of this, which means the geodesic descent. The reason why we defined this is that we can show that UP0 in fact satisfies the iconal equation, which is norm of gradient U equal P. So before getting there, what we can see is that the level sets are the level set of the action, minimal action here, can be seen as the front propagation, as I showed here. It looks at a slide that was missing here. Because yes, here that the file was converted and this was missing. Oh no, it's not missing, it's just it was hidden, okay. Okay. Okay, sorry about that. Okay. So in order to see the connection with the iconal equation, what we see is that in fact what happens is the potential P here is equal to a constant. So I mentioned already this case, which means that if P is a constant, for example, if P equal 1, then the energy corresponds to the Euclidean distance of the curve, the Euclidean length of the curve, C. So you see here that if P is a constant, then the integral here corresponds to this constant times the length L of the curve. So which means that if you show here the minimal action here, the minimal action corresponds to minimizing the constant times the length of the curve. So the length is minimal between a starting point P0 here and any given point on the image domain. The curve that minimizes the length between P0 and P is a straight length, is a straight line. And so if it is a straight line, it means that here UP0 of P corresponds to the constant times the length of the straight line, with the length of the straight line is exactly the distance, the Euclidean distance from P0 to a point P in the image. So here UP0 of P corresponds exactly to C times the Euclidean distance to P0, which means that the level sets of P of UP0 are circles, and these circles start at the starting point P0. So there's a small circle, we reduce to a point at P0. And what you see here is that the minimal paths are, as I mentioned earlier, the minimal paths here are straight lines, which are orthogonal to these circles, which means that are in the direction of the gradient of U. Since these circles are the level set of U, the gradient of U is orthogonal to its level set, as for any function. So now let's see what happens in the case similar to what we saw early with the lifeguard looking for a path on the sand and on the sea. Assuming that you have a potential which is based on two regions. One region is equal to P2, smaller one to one region equal to P1, which means that the function P, the potential, this is an artificial example, but this example corresponds exactly to the case of the lifeguard. So it means that P1 is a constant on this half part of the image domain, and P is constant P2 on this second half. Now if P0, the starting point is here, the minimal curve, minimal path to P0 will be a straight line if you are close enough to P0, because we are in exactly in the same case as this one. We are minimal path will stay inside this region, and so it will be proportional to the Euclidean distance to P0. And so the so UP0 will be proportional to the Euclidean distance to P0, and the level set of UP0 will be circles. Now, what happens if the point P1 is in the bottom? Then the minimal path that goes from P0 to P1 will have to spend some time in this region with value P1 and spend some time in the region with value P2. So the energy is equal. I mean, what can be seen is that so here you have P1, here you have P2, and you have the point P0, the point P1, and so you will have a curve between P0 and P1, and this curve has to pass through this line at some point. And what can be seen is that the path has to be, in fact, once it can be divided in three parts. One part is before it reaches this line. One part can be along this line, and one part will be afterwards. Actually, what happens, it can be seen that since P is constant here, the minimal path between P0 and the first point reaching the interface has to be a straight line. And same for the same reason, since P is constant in this region, the minimal path has to be a straight line. Now, since the potential P is also equal to P2 on this line, in fact, this is a straight line here. This case is not happening. So what happens, in fact, is that the curve can be shown to be composed of one straight line reaching the interface and another straight line here. So now the energy will be P1 times this length, L1, plus P2 times L2, where this length. So you can make a simple calculus to look for, to find these two points being fixed. What is the point to be chosen on this line in order to minimize this expression? Which means that you can find easily the length of this part and the length of this part, and looking for a point here, when you move this point, when will this reach a minimum? And in fact, what you can see is that the minimum value here corresponds to what is very well known in geometric optics as the Snell's law. So we'll see in a moment the connection, but what can be seen here is that since it is a straight line in this part and a straight line in this part, what happens is that the minimal action U here can be seen as by its level sets here are circles when you are close to P0, and there are parts of circle where you are here in the second part. But what you can see here is that the circles are closer to each other in this part than in this part. And this we'll see right now the reason by the connection with Fermat principle in geometric optics. So in geometric optics, what the Fermat principle says is that the path followed by the light between a source point P0 and a point P1 is the path where the time is minimized. Which means that this is exactly the same problem as we saw this example here, the same thing, minimizing time. In fact, this slide should have appeared earlier. So what you see that the time that you go on this curve C can be the integral of the inverse of the speed. So the time T is equal to the integral between P0 and P1 of 1 over the speed, what we call V, and the speed here, the speed of the light. Here you assume that you have 2 medium, where here we have a given speed and here we have a given speed. Then this can be reduced to what is called, the speed of the light in some medium is equal to C over N, where C is the constant of the light speed in the emptiness, and N is the refraction index of the medium you consider. So it means that V equals C over N. So if you replace V here by C over N, you have N over C. And this is how we get this formula here, because C is a constant. So here you reach this minimization of N, which is exactly the same as minimization of P. So here it means that P is equal to the refraction index of the medium you're going through. So in the first case here, the medium is homogeneous. I mean, you have only one medium, which is where the n is constant, and so this the light speed will be constant everywhere, and so the trajectory of light will be a straight line, so exactly as here. Now, in the second case, you assume that, for example, you have water and air, and so you have two different refraction index, and the light will go from point P0 to P1 in this way. It will be, you'll have refracted light, which means that the light is, the light ray will change orientation. And what the Snell-Descartes law says is that it gives a law, if you consider these angles here, you have sinus of these angles times the refraction index is the same on each side. So this gives you the law to find the optimal trajectory. And in fact, if you solve, as I said earlier, this problem, finding the point along this curve, minimizing this energy, you find exactly Snell-Descartes law. Okay. So now that we've seen all this, these level sets of the minimal action can be seen as level sets of the geodesic distance to point P0, or can be seen as level sets of the time that you allow the light to go to some point. So here you see that a circle here corresponds to all the points that are reached by the light starting at this source point in a given time. So it means that here, if the source point is here, the light will reach all these points on this curve at the same time. And so what you can see here is that if you consider actually, the fact is that you have an image that is known as a discrete image at the beginning, so you can define it as you like. I mean, you can give it the smoothness you wish, since at the beginning it is a discrete signal. So. I mean, you have different ways of looking at it, but if you wish to avoid problems, you can say that the continuous signal can be as smooth as you wish. But anyway, what you see here is that if you define the level set of the geodesic distance, so you call L of t is the point in the image domain for which up0 of p equals t. So these are exactly these curves we've seen so far. I mean, these curves. What can be seen is that the L of t, in the first case, L of t is a circle of radius t over c. And in the second case, it is a more complicated curve. But what can be seen is that locally, if you consider your L of t, and you consider L of t plus delta t, so if you consider two level sets that are infinitely close one to the other, so you have P0 here. If you consider a point P1 on this level set, then, assuming that you have minimal path between P0 and P1, this minimal path has to pass by this level set at some point. Since along this curve, the geodesic distance is equal I mean, if you take a point that goes along this curve, the geodesic distance to this, from P0 to this point, here it is zero, here it is T plus delta T, and so it has to pass by T at some point. So you have a point P2 here, where it is, which is on this curve. So now if you write that the energy along the integral of P of C between P0 and P1 is equal, by definition, it is equal to T plus delta T, and it is also equal to the energy between P0 and P2 plus the energy between P2 and P1. So by definition, the energy between P0 and P2 is equal to T, because this point is on the T level set. So this is equal to T. And integral over between P2 and P1, since you are on an infinitely small part of the curve, you can assume that this is the integral of P of C as yes. So you can assume P, the potential P, to be constant on this small part. And this can be P of P1 times this length L. So what you see from this is that T plus delta T equals T plus P of P1 L, which means that L, which is the distance between two level sets, is equal to delta T over P, which can be seen also as L over delta T equal 1 over P. L over delta T is the speed of the front between T and T plus delta T. The front is moving this way, and the speed of the front at a point, at a given point, is exactly L over delta T, and it is shown here to be 1 over P. So it means that the front, if what you call the front is the level set of value T of the minimal action P, then you see that the speed of the front is 1 over P, which can be seen here. If P is a constant, it means you see that you have a speed that is constant. The circle here is moving at constant speed. While in the second example, you see that the front is going slower where P1 is larger, and it's going faster where the potential P is smaller, which illustrates the fact that the speed is 1 over P. Okay, so this is an idea of the, this is not a rigorous proof, but it can be proven more rigorously, that the speed dl over dt equal 1 over p times n, where n is the normal to the level set here. So assuming that you have shown this, then you can see that u p0 satisfies the iconal equation. So this so this is because u of, by definition, u of L of T equal T. So by definition, you have L of T is the the level one? Yeah, the level set of U. But if you write L of T is in fact is a curve, so you can parameterize by in fact you can call it L of T and S. So locally you can have a parameter S, which is the arc length, and you can write locally this equation. So now if you take the derivative of this with respect to S, what you find is gradient U of L TS times DL over DS equals zero. And if you take the derivative according to T, you find gradient U of L and of TS scalar DL over DT equals 1. So what you deduce from these two equations is the first one is a very general thing, that here the tangent to the level set is orthogonal to the gradient of U, which means that the gradient of U is orthogonal to its level set. This is a very well-known fact, which means that the normal to the level set L is, if you call N the normal to the level set, it is equal to gradient U over norm of gradient U. And now, if you replace dl over dt by its value here, 1 of p over p n, we find gradient u scalar 1 over p n, where n is gradient u or norm of gradient u, equals 1. So we have this, which means that we have gradient u scalar gradient u is 1, is norm of gradient u square divided by norm of gradient u. This what remains is norm of gradient u equals p. Yes? Which is the third, this one? Between what and what? Here, when we generate, when you take the derivative according to S, this is zero. Yeah, right. And according to T, this is one. Okay. It's okay? Okay. Okay. So what we've shown here is that if you define UP0, the minimal action, as being the minimal weighted distance, the geodesic distance according to the metric P, what you find is that its level set satisfies this front propagation equation with speed 1 over p, and we deduce that the up0 satisfies the gradient, the orthogonal equation norm of gradient u equal p with boundary value up0 of p0 equals 0, which means that the geodesic distance between p0 and itself is 0. So now this is called orthogonal equation from the Greek icon is connected to light. I mean, this is correspond to what we explained earlier, that this time the time that lights go to a point is correspond exactly to the same thing, to the same geodesic distance according to the metric defined with n, the reflection index. Okay. Okay. So this is maybe you wish to stop a few minutes now. Okay, this is a good point to stop. So I don't know, is it clear so far, or is it too slow or too fast or too slow? Okay. So does, and the other people, do you think it's okay or who? Okay. Okay, so far we've seen that defining the minimal action, UP0 of P as minimal geodetic distance, we have UP0 satisfies the Iaconal equation. So the example we saw before is the case P equals 1, then U is the Euclidean distance to P0. It is well known that the Euclidean distance satisfies norm of gradient U equals 1. Okay. Now the question is how to find the minimal task. So, I mean, once you have solved gradient U equal P, and we'll see in a few minutes how to solve numerically this equation, assume that you have solved this, how to find the geodesic path, because what you're interested in is finding the path between P0 and P1. So what I said earlier is that this will be obtained as a back propagation from the endpoint P2 to P1 by solving gradient descent. So here the gradient descent is on a point. So it's, you start from point P2 and you make a distance descent in the direction minus gradient UP starting from P2, and so you define the curve C as C prime of S equal minus gradient U with C of 0 if P equals P2. And what happens is that by definition of the function U, since P is positive and you have gradient U is never equal to 0, so this gradient descent will have to reach the starting point P1 by the end. I mean, this curve has to, I mean, if you start, I'm sorry, in some slides the starting point is P0 and point P1, in some slides this is P1 and P2. I'm sorry, I forgot to fix this, but I hope you can adapt yourself to this. But so here, if you give endpoint and you make a gradient descent from this endpoint, then the gradient descent will have to end at the starting point. So it will give a curve that goes from the endpoint to the starting point. Now, what happens is that if you, from this curve, so here, what we show here is that this curve obtained by gradient descent, which is the minimum of the energy, so it is a geodesic path, which means that here, in fact, there are two ways to show this, a very long way, is to see that the curve defined by this satisfies Euler-Lagrange equation of E. So E of C here, if C minimizes this energy, can be seen that C satisfies the gradient P scalar M with normal equal P of C kappa, where kappa is a curvature. So it is. So this is Euler-Lagrange equation of this, and it can be seen that, it can be shown that this curve satisfies this Euler-Lagrange equation. Yes. The potential field. No, sorry, so the notation is changed. Okay. Anyway, but however, what we're going to show is directly that if we assume this curve obtained by gradient descent, it reaches the minimum value of the energy. So to see this, what we say is that we adopt here different notation. Sorry for that. So this is the correct notation now, that we are looking for a curve between P0 and P1. We have the first curve is obtained by gradient descent. It's called C1. So C1 is starting at the endpoint P1 and ending at the starting point P0. So it is obtained by gradient descent. It means that C prime of S equals minus gradient U over norm of gradient U. Defined this way, it ensures that the norm of C prime is equal to 1, which means that S here is the arc length. Now, from this curve, we define the curve C, which is the same curve, but in the other, that goes the other way. So we call C of S equals C1 of L minus S. So this is the same geometric curve, but it is it starts at P0 and ends at P1. So defining C of S, what we see is that, what we'll see now is that C of S, as defined, reaches the minimum value of the energy between P0 and P1. So to see this, what we see is that by definition, UP0 of P1, it's the minimum of integral of P of gamma among all paths gamma, or sorry, here should be gamma of 0 is P0 and gamma of L is P1. So among all paths gamma that link P0 and P1, you're looking for the minimum. So this is the definition. Now, what you can say is that UP0 of P1 equals UP0 of P1 minus UP0 of P0, because UP0 of P0 by definition is 0. Now, this is also equal to UP0 of C of L minus UP0 of C of 0, because C, by definition, the curve C of L is P1 and C of 0 is P0. Now, this is the difference between 0 and L of the function UP0 of C. So we can say that this is equal to the integral of its derivative. So this is equal to the integral of, between 0 and L of the derivative of UP0 of C of S. Now, the derivative of UP0 of C of S is gradient UP0 of C of S scalar C prime of S. Now, C prime of S, by definition, this is minus C prime 1 of L minus S. And C prime 1 is minus gradient U over norm of gradient U. So when you make the change, you find that C prime of S is equal to gradient U over gradient norm of gradient U. So it means that this is equal to this integral. So UP0 of P1 is equal to this integral. And now what we find is that gradient UP0 times gradient UP0 is norm, square of the norm, divided by the norm. It is equal to the integral of norm of gradient UP0. Now, since what we assumed at the beginning that norm of gradient UP0 is P, because we assume that UP0 solves this economical equation. So we have here, this is the integral of P, which means that UP0 of P1 is what we've shown in these few lines, is UP0 of P1 is equal to the integral between 0 and L of P of C of S dS, which means this is the energy of C of S. This is the energy of the curve C that we have defined by gradient descent, which means that C of S reaches the minimum which is here. So UP0 of P1 is the minimum of this energy among all paths joining P0 and P1, and we see that this is equal to the energy of the path we have defined, C of S, which means that C of S is a minimal path. So we've seen that the two steps we defined allow you to find the minimal path, the geodesic path between P0 and P1. So once again, for given P0, you solve the Iconal equation, and given P1, you solve gradient descent till you reach P0. And the path between P0 and P1 is a minimal path. So now the question is how to solve the Iconal equation. And there are two kind of methods to solve the Iconal equation. One is an iterative method, and one is more a single pass method. What we see is that some earlier methods in order to solve this second order equation are kind of evolution equation, where you start by defining what you're looking for is a solution of the Aquinas equation with UP0 of P0 equals 0. So you can define an initial value of U equals 0 everywhere and solve the evolution equation du over dtau this is an artificial time, equal P minus norm of gradient U. And so this is what happens is that when this evolves and reaches a steady state, this steady state means that it reaches an equilibrium. I mean, U in finite is a steady state by definition. This means that du over dtau tends to zero, and U infinite will reach zero equal P minus gradient U infinite. So in the limit, when you do that for a long time, you'll reach a solution of the Iconal equation. So this was the earlier methods in order to solve the Iconal equation. And these are called sequential method or evolution equation method. And the problem that you can see in this method is that since you have a norm of gradient U here, you have to be very careful in the way you solve it numerically, this evolution equation. Because if you just solve it like so if you see what happens in the 1D case, where you're looking for a function U prime equals 1, for example, and so here you have, for example, you give 2 points, and you're looking for you give a starting point here. And you're looking to solve, to find the Euclidean distance to the starting point. In this case, it is the absolute value of x. And it solves norm of u prime equals 1. So if you wish to solve this numerically, you define, and it doesn't work to just use finite difference. Because if you call ui is values like this, and what you know is u0 equals 0, and from this you have ui plus 1 minus ui equals 1. So if you have this set of equation, you see that it is not the solution is not unique. I mean, because for u1 you would u0 equals 0, so u1 you would have u1 equal 1, so you can have either value 1 or value minus 1. So now if you say that you wish to have, by definition, has to be positive, so in the first place it will give 1, but the second case u2 minus 1 equals 1 will give either 2 or 0. Which means that when you go up, the next step you can go down or go up, and every time you can, in the discrete case, when you take finite differences, you can find any curve that go up and down of one each time. So it means that you have a large set of solutions, and in fact the the idea that was introduced long time ago to solve this kind of problem is to use a discrete scheme that uses the maximal value, I mean, the maximal solution among all the solutions. I mean, this is what's called the viscosity solution. And in order to find this, I mean, you define the derivative here. Instead of taking ui plus 1 minus ui, we define this scheme, which is a max of three values. One is the difference on the right, one is the difference on the left, and zero. So you consider, in fact, the max of these three values, and you do that. So in the 2D case, you have norm of gradient u square is x derivative square plus y derivative square equals p square, and each derivative is estimated as the maximum value of these three terms. So here left, right, and zero, here up, down, and zero. So using this scheme was shown to be efficient and proven to converge to solution of Iconal equation. Now, this first way of solving it means that you solve an iterative equation, an evolution equation, which means that iteratively you solve u0 equals 0 everywhere, and then un plus 1 minus un over delta tau equals p minus norm of gradient un. So it means that you have an iterative scheme where each time you compute the whole domain. I mean, at the beginning, u equals 0 on the whole domain, on the whole image domain, and at each iteration, you compute u on the whole domain from the previous value. So it means that you have, what you say, you sweep the image domain a lot of times. In fact, at each time you have, if n is the number of pixels, the number of grid points on the image domain, it can be seen that I think this is n square, the number the computation time in order to solve this evolution equation, because you may need up to n iteration to solve to converge. Now, what we're going to see now is a much faster way of solving the Iconal equation, which is called the fast marching. So, this fast marching is based exactly on the same numerical scheme to solve, but it is based on some observation on this scheme that what you're looking for, in fact, when you solve norm of gradient u is equal p, you say that at each grid point xij, you should have the minimal action u is solution of this numerical scheme. And in fact, this equation here is in fact a second degree equation. You have u minus something square plus u minus something square equals something. So this is can be solved very easily as second degree equation in u, in small u. And what can be seen is that since you have a scheme that depends here on a max of u minus something, and zero, the something here, in fact, are the values of u as the four neighbors. So you have here. So you have ij here, and you have ij minus 1, ij plus 1, I plus 1j, I minus 1j. So you have the four neighbors here. And what you see here is that the value at ij obtained by solving this second degree equation is depending on the values of the four neighbors. But in fact, among these four neighbors, it depends only on those that have values that are smaller than u. That it means that if you're looking for the value u here, and you'll the neighbors that will be that will be used to solve this equation are only those for which u minus the value at the neighbor is larger than zero. So a neighbor is used in this equation only if the neighbor is smaller than the value you are looking for. Which means that this can be solved in a sequential way, but on the whole image domain. It can be solved in a clever way by increasing values of u, which means that by definition u is positive everywhere, and u is equal to zero in p0. So the smaller value is reached at p0, and then we're going to assume that we are going to make an iterative scheme where at each iteration we'll add a new point. Only one grid point will be given a value that will be the final value. So assume at the beginning you have only one point which has final value, which is p0, for which the value is zero. Now assume that at some point in this iterative scheme you have a set of points for which you assume that the value of u is final, which means that it has been computed. Then the hypothesis you make is that you assume that all the computed values so far are smaller than all the values to come. So the idea now is that for each point which has at least one neighbor in this set, you can compute an estimate of the value at this point by solving this second degree equation. To solve this second degree equation, you need at least to have one among the four neighbors, at least one which has a value which is already known. So for each point in the image domain which has only or already one neighbor in this set, you can solve this equation and give a value. So it means that basically it is the set of points around here. For each point here, you can estimate a value. And what you say that at each iteration, you'll take among all these points, you'll take the one which has the smaller value of u. So among all these, you take the one which has the smallest value. By definition, this value is larger than all the ones that were before. And since it is the smaller that was estimated here, it will also be the smaller smaller than all the values to come. So it means that you can iteratively define values, and you will pass by one grid point one time only in this scheme. So it means that you have exactly n iteration, where at each iteration you compute one grid point, which is very fast. So we can see that now in more details, this fast marching algorithm. So here it is shown how to solve norm of gradient u equals 1, starting from p0 in the center of the domain. And what you see here is that you take at each time the the, I mean, it is computed on, so here you see the grid points, and here you see the function, the graph of the function u, and each time the green grid point here is the one that is added, which is the smallest among the grid point to be defined. And so, no, no. You, all the points that have been visited are you see here that that's you, first you start around the starting point and you go by increasing values of u. So at each iteration you add the smallest value of the one which has not been defined yet. Could you repeat your question, maybe?
So you've computed all the ones on that second curve, right?
Yeah, this? Yeah.
It's the smallest one.
Yeah.
That means the other ones will have to be revisited.
Okay, yeah, yeah. I didn't understand your question. Yes, of course. We'll see this in a moment, but... Okay. Yes, in fact, we will see this. Okay. Okay, what is that? Okay, so this is what we said. Okay, so in fact, to be more clear here, what is defined in the Sasse-Marching algorithm, you called alive points are points for which you have computed the value of u, which is final, which means you will not revisit them anymore. Now we have trial points are points that you have visited, and you have at least one neighbor which is alive, so you can solve this scheme here and define a temporary value of u at all these trial points. Now far points are points that have no neighbor which is known already, so you cannot do anything on them. So the initialization is that you have only one alive point which is p0, and you have four trial points, which are I don't know, it doesn't work. Okay. You have as the starting point p0, you have the four neighbors which are trial points for which you can estimate this scheme, and then you compute the minimum value. At each iteration, you take the minimal value along all the trial points, and this trial point becomes alive, and so you add its four neighbors as trial points, except if they are already alive, you don't move them, you don't change them, and in any case, you revisit these neighbors. So if this is the trial point which becomes alive, then this and this trial point are revisited because now you take into account the final value of this point, which was not used before. So now, if you consider the set of alive points, the set of trial points, in fact, can be seen as a front that is around the set of alive points. I mean, the set of trial points can be seen as a front, and when you evolve when you advance in the iteration, this set of trial points evolves and can be seen as a front propagation. I mean, in fact, at each iteration, you have only one point that moves, but globally, this can be seen as a front propagation that evolves. So, okay, so here you have the complete description of the algorithm, but this is basically what I've explained, the definition of alive trial far. Okay, so it doesn't work either. Okay. Okay. So the only thing that we've not seen yet exactly is the loop here. So I'm not sorry, don't work. Okay. So at each iteration, you consider among all the trial points, the one which has smallest action, U, and this point, you move it from the trial list to the alive set, and so you give its final value, U, and for each neighbor, for each of the four neighbors, so if the neighbor is far, now you add it to the trial set, and you compute U using the scheme here, and if the neighbor is trial, then you update what you call revisit the point. You compute again this, you solve again this equation, which means that if it is, if the neighbor is alive, you do nothing. Okay, so now we'll see what happens concretely on this example. So here you have the image shows the potential P. So you see that the potential P is smaller when it is darker here. The starting point here is P1 here. And at the beginning, in fact, you have, this is kind of algorithmic trick that you can define at the beginning that you have no trial point, and the starting point is trial. Or you can say at the beginning you have the starting point is alive and its four neighbors are trial. I mean, it's just an algorithmic trick, but it doesn't matter so much. But the next step will be anyway this, where the starting point is alive and its four neighbors are trial. Now, which means that at this point, here you see the values of U that you obtained. So the value of U of the four neighbors, you consider which one will be the smallest value, and you here it is this point. So at this point it becomes alive, and so you add these three points as trial, and you compute their values. So once again, among all the six trial points, you're looking for the one which has smaller value, and you make it a trial, a life point, and you go on this process everywhere. So when you see this process going on, what you can see here is that the set of life points has a rate point. At the end, it covers the whole domain. But the interesting thing is that the set of blue points, the trial points, as I said, it can be seen as a front that propagate inside the image. So you see here that this front propagation corresponds, in fact, exactly to what we have seen earlier as the level set of U. Because at a given stage of the iterative scheme, we said that all the points that are alive have smaller values than all the points that will be computed later on, which means that the set of trial points here can be seen as a level set of U at each iteration. So at a given stage in the algorithm, the set of trial points can be seen as a level set, and so here what you see, the evolution of these blue points can correspond exactly to the evolution of the level set of U we discussed earlier, that goes faster, that moves at a speed 1 over P. So you can see that here P is smaller, so it goes faster along the smaller P, and then it goes slower everywhere else. Okay, so once at each iteration you the basic operation is computing the value, solving this equation. So as I said, this is a second degree equation which we can solve, which you can write. I'm not going into details here, but basically you can consider among the four neighbors, you can always call A, in the horizontal direction, you can call A is the one which has the smallest value, and B is the one which has the smallest value in the other direction. No, A1 and B1. So you can say that the equation to solve is U minus U of A1 square plus U minus U of B1 square equal P square. And this, now you have to compute the discriminant of this second degree equation. And to see that this equation either has two solutions or no solution. And in fact, this all this is dependent on the fact that what you are looking for is a solution of this equation that is larger. I mean, in order to have a U minus U of A1 here, it means that you have, in fact, max of U minus U of A1, U minus U of A2, and zero. So where A1 and A2 are the two horizontal points. Now, what you assume is that this max is U minus U of A1, which means that this has to be positive. So in case, because you wish to find a solution that is larger than the previous values. So you assume that U is larger than one point. Now, the solution of this equation, it has to be larger than it has to satisfy the hypothesis which led to this equation. So once you have found the, so you have two criterion. One criterion is the discriminant of this equation. Does this equation have two solutions? And does one solution of this equation is it larger than the U of A1 and U of B1 as assumed at the beginning? So in fact, everything can be summarized in this criterion. If the potential at Rij is larger than U of B1 minus U of A1, then the solution is this. And by hypothesis, it will be larger than U of B1 and U of A1. And this will be the value at this point. So if this criterion is not valid, it will mean that the hypothesis here is not valid, and the solution will not depend on two neighbors, but only on one neighbor. Which means that it will be the solution will be in fact in there will be only one term in the equation. So in this equation, in fact, the max will be zero, and there will be only U minus U of A1 square equal P square, which means that U will be equal to U of A1 plus or minus P square, plus or minus P. And since you're looking for a value which is larger than U of A1, it will be U of A1 plus P. So it means that you have two possibilities. Either the point here is solved using two points, one in each direction, or it is solved using only one point. So everything depends on this criterion. So this criterion will give you the choice. So in fact, maybe to conclude, I'll show some example of all we've seen so far. That so in this image, the ultrasound image, you are looking for boundaries of the black region here. So you define a potential which is inverse proportional, a decreasing function of the gradient of the image, and so this is the gradient. And here, in ultrasound images, they are very noisy, and using a gradient is you see that it is not obvious at all to find a contour in this image. So using classical active contours that I told about at the beginning, will be very difficult on this kind of image because it is very noisy, and the evolution of the active control will be stopped in local minima very easily. The fact that we use here this geodesic method allows you to find the global minima between P0 and P1, and it allows you, given these two points, you solve the Akonal equation. So here you see the level set of the Akonal equation. And so you see the here, maybe I'll use the mouse. So you start here, and you see that the boundary is like this. So, and you see that the, the level set here, you see that the front propagation here goes faster along the boundary, and it goes slower in the background. But what you see here is that the minimal path obtained here by gradient descent is here orthogonal to this level set, and you can see it here as a gradient descent on the graph of U. So here on the graph, the starting point is the point that is at the lower level at zero, and starting from the endpoint P1, you make a gradient descent on this surface, and you follow the minimal path, which is shown here superimposed on the image and on the potential image. So what you see here is that using classical active contours would have been very difficult because of local minima, and using this kind of approach gives you global minimum of the energy, which gives you very good result. So now here's the second example on the biologic image of neuron. And so here, this is the original image. The first step is to compute the potential. So the what you're looking for is this structure here. So the potential is defined using the green channel of this color image. And this is the potential. So you see the potential is dark along the structure. Given P1 and P2, you compute the Akonal equation using the fast marching. So here the blue front here corresponds to the set of trial points. And so you see here the front propagation of the fast marching. So at the end of this, you have a value of U everywhere on the domain. And then you make a gradient descent. So here again, it is a graph of U. So which means the surface Z equals U of XY. And starting from the endpoint P2, you make a gradient descent on this surface, and it follows, so the equation here, and it follows the minimal path. So it follows this minimal path, which is here superimposed on the potential image, so you see that you found this the path that you expect. So here you see another example with vessels. So given P0, you make this front propagation using the fast marching, and then given the endpoint here, you make gradient descent and find the path inside this vessel. Okay, so here is this simple synthetic image of an ellipse, and this is nothing new in this example. You give a starting point here, and here you have the minimal action, and here you have the minimal path between the starting point and the end point here. So now to come back to the initial image where you had the aerial image of roads, you give a starting point here and end point here, and your minimal path here follows the road. So this is compared here to what you had to provide for the active contours. For the active contours, you have to provide a very precise curve. I mean, a curve that precisely is on the road, and you get a smooth curve, nice curve on this road, while when you use the geodesic approach, you just give a starting point and end point, and you find the global minima of the simplified active contours in FG, and so you find directly a path that follows the road. Now, you can see this geodesic approach as the complete solution of the problem, or you can see it as a first step where from these two points you get this path, and then you can use this path as initial path for active contour. Because as I said, in this geodesic approach, you miss the second order term, which makes the curve here much smoother and avoids high curvature like you may have here. So if you wish to have a nicer curve like this, you could use this curve as initial curve for the active contour, and then in a very small number of iteration you would get the same result as here, but just giving start point and end point. Okay, so maybe we stop here and we'll start again from here. Okay. Okay. If your metric has, if the metric has what? What? I don't understand what you mean, conjugate point. Yeah.
You take two
points. Yes.
What are the margins
in which you're Oh, so it is similar to here, in fact. Here, in fact, if you take a point that is exactly at the other end here, you have two geodesics. I mean, both will be solutions. So, I mean, both will, in fact, here in this example, both will be good solution because both will follow a contour. But it's not that one is good and one is not good. But both are good. Now, the one which will be chosen is depending on how you, the algorithm, which one the algorithm finds first. I mean, for the very beginning, the propagation will be both in both ways, as you can see here. In this example here, the same thing. Here you can see the front propagation propagate in both ways, and in fact the both paths will join here. So in fact the point that is here chosen in fact it corresponds to the, you have two sides, two geodesics. So in fact, that since you have the point you give will I mean you'll have a gradient descent at the beginning. So the gradient, since you will not be exactly you'll choose the direction of descent accordingly. I mean the first direction of descent will give you the choice of point of path. But in fact, we'll discuss about this later on. In fact, yeah.
Does the marking scheme work in 3D?
Yes, we'll also talk about that.
And also for the ultrasound picture, did you smooth out the noisy image to get the
key? Yes, in fact, this is what means the sigma here means that you I didn't say that you make. Convolution with a sigma Gaussian before you compute the gradient.
And also, when on the next one where you have the nerve, right? So, here to even define the P.
Yeah.
If you can do that, you already basically have the nerve, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is an illustration. No, in fact, I do not pretend that I'm going to use this method for this example, but. this is to show that an illustration that it gives what you expect. But and in this example, it is very easy to see what happens and the propagation and the gradient descent. So this is more an illustration of what you do than an efficient way of computing the path. So here it is a very simple case where you know the path. But this is to illustrate, rather, you're right that it's already found.
Okay.
Okay.